Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Once again, I am your host, Lauren Cox. You can find my work at Pro Football Focus and at USA Today's BearsWire.com. You can follow me on Twitter at CoxSports1. You can follow this show on Twitter at Locked On Bears, and you can find all of our daily podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and of course our website, www.lockedonbears.com. First of all, I hope every one of you had an enjoyable holiday weekend. Whatever you celebrate, I hope you were able to do it with friends, families, loved ones, whoever it is that's important with your life. I hope you were able to at least spend some quality time with them. I don't necessarily know if that quality time for a lot of you involved watching Bears versus Browns on Sunday, a hopeless matchup between two teams with nothing to play for, but I spent my Christmas Eve watching some Chicago Bears football, and it wasn't, you know, it was a Bears win. Hey, how many of those have we gotten to watch this year? Makes it a little bit more enjoyable to go back through the tape, especially in a game like this. So that's exactly what we're going to do today. It's Tape Tuesday, so of course we've got to jump into the All-22 from the game. We'll take a look at Kyle Fuller's big performance and sort of what goes into that for him. We'll talk about what the Browns did poorly that kind of set the Bears defense and offense up for more success. And we'll also look at what Mitchell Trubisky was able to do and why this was an important game in his young development. We always seem to start these with the Bears offense. So for Bears Browns this week, let's start with the defensive side of the ball, where the Bears held the Browns to just 3 points, and Kyle Fuller obviously had a big game, and we'll get to that in a minute. But just from a big picture look here, you know, the Browns offense with DeShone Kizer under center, there was a similar feel at times to what the Bears do offensively in terms of how they try and scheme for their rookie quarterback. I mean, I think Hugh Jackson drew up a lot of these sort of predetermined built-in throws where it's one read to one side of the field. Kizer doesn't have to try and figure out too much. He just has to figure out which of his two or three guys over there is going to be open, whether it's the deep guy, the intermediate guy, the check down, or whatever concept they're running. There were a few of those that they started getting into of just easy read, check down, 3-4 yards, and obviously that wasn't enough to put together consistent drives because that's not their entire offense. I mean, they mix those in like the Bears do to maybe try and get your young quarterback into a rhythm, but then you get into third down situations, sometimes third and long, because the Browns couldn't get the ball moving consistently enough on the first two downs, and you have to let your rookie quarterback read the field and make an accurate and smart throw. And obviously when the Bears do that, they've had more success with it based on the ability of their rookie quarterback. And when the Browns let DeShone Kizer do that, we see a lot of inaccurate balls, a lot of poor decisions, and throws that allow Bears players to at least get their hands on it, even if they weren't all intercepted. And we know Kyle Fuller had a ton of pass breakups in the game, but a few other guys did too, and plenty of Bears had opportunities for perhaps bigger plays. But again, it all added up to shutting down a Browns offense, which, again, isn't maybe the most impressive or difficult task per se, but you know, the Browns have played some pretty good teams close. I mean, relatively speaking, for a winless football team, they've had a lot better offensive performances than they were able to get against the Bears on Sunday. And you know, at least I think you got to give even a tiny bit of credit to the Bears defense and Vic Fangio. Again, even if it's DeShone Kizer and the Browns, still holding a team to 3 points is not nothing. I thought Vic Fangio did a good job early on trying to throw some different looks at the Browns to maybe confuse DeShone Kizer. You look at just the first three plays in the game. The first play, the Bears came out in a 3-4 defense, their usual base. Second down, they're in 4-3, four down linemen, three linebackers. Then on third down, it might have been a first down again. I think the Browns picked it up on the ground on that second down run. But they get to first down again, and the Bears come out with their 3-3-5 nickel defense with three defensive linemen and three linebackers, and then, of course, the five defensive backs behind them. So different things for Kizer and this offensive line of Cleveland to have to figure out pre-snap, to get to the line of scrimmage and make a call with the same players in now completely different spots or different groups of players to try and just add another layer of difficulty for this struggling rookie quarterback to try and have to figure out. And then you get to some third down situations later in the game, and Fangio, he's coming with these interesting formations where, like, he had one play where Akeem Hicks and Roy Robertson Harris were the only two defensive linemen, but they were both on the right side of the defense and, like, lined up over the guard and the tackle. And then he had, you know, two outside linebackers on the other side with another inside linebacker kind of over there, and they brought an interesting twist on that side, and I believe they got pressure on Kizer on that play and forced a pretty poor decision. So, there, I mean, there's different things that Vic Fangio clearly tried to do to try and get under DeShone Kizer's, you know, get in his head a little bit. And, you know, credit to the Bears' individual players, too. I mean, the Browns don't have a fantastic offensive line, but they were still able to get, you know, some great pass rush from the Bears here. Like Sam Acho, for example, going up against Spencer Drango from Baylor, the former guard they've kind of pushed out to tackle in the place of the injured Joe Thomas. He had a lot of trouble at the left tackle position and did not offer a lot of resistance at times. And Sam Acho made some nice plays, and there were a few different times where he got to the quarterback after he threw it and delivered that hit. And he showed me a little bit more closing speed in this game than I thought he might have had. And I thought of DeShone Kizer a little bit more, not that he's a running quarterback per se, but he's a more mobile quarterback than some of your statuesque pocket guys. And I was surprised the way that Acho was able to even seem to play faster than Kizer. And even when, you know, Kaiser's not always fully scrambling, but there was just a few plays of closing speed from Sam Acho that I just don't think we've seen much from him this season. And it was good that, again, a Bears starved pass rush was at least getting something from a veteran who's been playing a lot of snaps lately. Of course, we kind of buried the lead here with Kyle Fuller's big game at cornerback. I think when it was all said and done, the Pro Football Focus numbers on his production, he was targeted 10 times, allowed one catch for a handful of yards. They credited him with four true pass breakups, pass defenses. And the way PFF charts it is the defensive back has to make contact with the football to give it the PD stat. I mean, they still give positive grades for other types of pass breakups, but from a stat purpose, they call other types of pass breakups different things. But if he actually physically deflects the ball in any shape or form, it gets a PD, and he got four of them in the game along with his one interception. I want to say half of his 10 targets came against Josh Gordon, maybe 6 out of 10 off the top of my head. I don't have it right in front of me at the moment, but still a great matchup and one that Kyle Fuller definitely won. It was interesting because it looked like on tape that Kyle Fuller was not scared of Josh Gordon's speed, particularly, you know, in the vertical type game. You know, I think Gordon didn't necessarily do himself any favors, and I think his route running, and maybe you could call it effort, but definitely at least route running in this type of game, at this type of the season, it could use a little work. Because when you watch Josh Gordon run routes in this game, you can tell when he's sprinting and trying to get deep and when you have to turn and run with him to keep up. And you can also see the difference to when he's clearly just running the stem of a route that's going to break in a different direction. He runs at different speeds. Even if he's running deep, he's not sprinting unless he's truly going vertical. But like there was a play where he ran like a dig in route over the middle, but it was like 15 yards upfield before he made his in cut. But Kyle Fuller was playing off of him, and Gordon never pushed to reach that full vertical speed before making his break. And so Fuller never turned and run, and never had to give up that separation because he could see that Josh Gordon was eventually here going to make a break. Or if he started to pick up his speed, then he would be ready to turn and run with him. But Gordon seemed to tell where, or at least whether or not he was going vertical or going to make a break. And Fuller could then wait and kind of recover and then obviously make some great plays on the ball. I do think, though, that his pass breakups can get a little bit blown out of proportion because, again, they're great plays, and not very many defensive backs can make some of the plays that Kyle Fuller made in this game. And you could tell his confidence was off the charts, and he was just really feeling himself. But I think there were a few of those plays where he made a better quarterback completes passes on those plays, and where DeShone Kizer kind of puts a pass up there, leaves it out there a little bit too long, and that's what allows a Kyle Fuller to recover and make the physical pass breakup. But, you know, there were certainly a few of them where it was just a great closing and a great finish by Kyle Fuller on what would have been an accurate and completed pass. There were other plays where if Kaiser gets it out quickly or just a better quarterback is under center, it might be a completion instead of a pass breakup, and we're having a little bit of a different conversation about Kyle Fuller. Phenomenal performance. Made some very, very incredible plays, and not to take anything away from him. But this is a this is a performance that wouldn't happen against other quarterbacks, and that doesn't mean it's less valuable. It's just something to put in perspective that there were times when the quarterback made it easier on Fuller, and he certainly took advantage. And not every cornerback can take advantage, but there's just a little bit of give and take in a performance like that. You know, Fuller did a great job not biting on double moves because he knew that DeShone Kizer's throws were going to give him more time to recover, so he didn't need to bite on anything. He could be maybe a half step behind just to make sure he's at least in position and not completely bitten and completely out of position to where he couldn't recover. So he could be more conservative and less aggressive with his coverage. And that works against a bad quarterback. That doesn't necessarily work against great quarterbacks. I think we've seen a lot of Kyle Fuller's best games come against maybe less than great quarterbacks. And that doesn't mean his performances aren't impressive, but there's just always some give and take, and I think we get too black and white with, oh, Kyle Fuller was perfect and is just this Pro Bowl caliber cornerback in this game and pay him all the money in the world. There's a lot of nuance that goes into evaluations, and I think the Bears are certainly going to be weighing all of that as they move forward into the offseason. Kyle Fuller's future in Chicago will definitely be a hot topic moving forward, and you can bet we'll be breaking it down all offseason on Locked On Bears. As exciting and encouraging as Kyle Fuller's performance was, there was another guy on defense that had a very opposite performance, in my opinion. I was extremely disappointed with how Nick Kwiatkowski played defensively in this game, just not fast enough mentally. You know, there's this perception among a lot of Bears fans that Nick Kwiatkowski is just too slow physically, that he can't get around fast enough to play linebacker on three downs. And he's not a fast linebacker, but I don't think that was the issue in this game, and I don't think it's been too much of an issue so far in his career. You know, it just seemed like mentally in this game he wasn't processing what was happening in front of him fast enough. And, you know, that's pretty fair to expect from a young linebacker, but it's just something he seemed to be past in previous games. It was not an issue that he's had consistently this season. Like, there was one play where he kind of missed his assignment in coverage where the Bears, when they play their cover one, they'll put in an adjustment where they're not sure who's going to be the zone guy over the middle. It'll depend on the route of the receiver, and the receiver kind of took off on a crossing route, and so Kwiatkowski was supposed to follow him in man coverage. He didn't. He passed him off to no one. It was a wide open throw for DeShone Kizer. Little things like that in coverage. And then perhaps the more disappointing part of his performance just came in run defense, where it seems like for weeks, Nick Kwiatkowski has been excellent. I mean, even in his rookie year, that seemed to be his sort of bread and butter. But in this game, he wasn't very aggressive. He wasn't very decisive. There were too many times when it felt like Kwiatkowski was sitting at the second level and kind of looking around and trying to figure out where the ball's going to go, but not stepping up. And he kind of let a lot of offensive linemen come to him and block him out of plays downfield instead of stepping up, you know, making that first contact, establishing his position, and forcing the running play to have to work around that or come right to him. Just not the same Nick Kwiatkowski in this game, and that was certainly disappointing for a promising young player. That brings us to everyone's favorite promising young player, young Mitchell Trubisky. Coming off of what John Fox called his best game of the season last week, in which he threw three interceptions, he came into this one and obviously took better care of the ball, but, you know, didn't necessarily need to light up the Browns defense in order for the Bears to win. Definitely made some very nice throws downfield when he needed to. Also took quite a few sacks and had a little bit of trouble at times with the Browns blitzing. And in particular on third down, Cleveland likes to bring the heat. They've done it all season. And so Mitchell Trubisky needs to know that, especially early in the game. it seemed to kind of surprise him. And he took some sacks when he shouldn't have, and maybe there were some times when he thought he could, you know, kind of shake the guy, the unblocked defender running at him, break the tackle and escape. Wasn't able to do that particularly early on. What he needs to do is find the hot read. And I went back and looked, obviously, and he had hot reads on pretty much all of his sacks. And they're not necessarily the ideal hot reads, in the sense that, like, you would ideally have, like, a running back out of the backfield who's turning and waiting for you. But every sack he took, he seemed to have one guy at least running a short route that was open, even if it wouldn't be your traditional hot type route. Like, there was one where Daniel Brown was running a little curl route, and it did kind of take him a little bit long to get to it, but if Mitch lets go of the ball before the pressure gets to him, it would have timed out pretty well to where Brown would have been ready for it when the ball got there. You know, it would have been almost perfect timing had Mitch been able to get rid of it, but instead he ended up taking the sack on a few of those. I think he was sacked 5 times in the game, and to his credit, he was able to escape, you know, 2 or 3 potential sacks in the game where guys got hands on him and he kind of, you know, turned his shoulders or jumped out of the way and was able to extend plays. But I wonder if he trusts it a little bit too much at times, where he thinks, you know, I mean, you want him to have the confidence to say, no one's going to bring me down, I'm going to stay up, escape this, and make the throw every time. You don't want him to concede that every time he's hit, he's going to be sacked. But at the same time, you don't want him to take those hits. So there's some give and take there with quarterback play, and I'm not going to kill him for taking some sacks in this game, even though, I mean, it's worse because it's the Browns and you don't want him to take hits in week 16 of a meaningless game against a winless football team. But, you know, you can, if that was the worst thing Mitchell Trubisky did all game, then you're sitting pretty, and it's something he can learn from. But, you know, it felt like as the game went on, his blitz recognition got better. You know, early on, I think it completely surprised him a few times, and just, you know, he was blindsided a little bit. And once he started to figure out a little bit, then he rushed a few throws and seemed to, you know, had a couple that had some poor locations where, like, the dropped pass by Daniel Brown was kind of way behind the tight end and shouldn't have been that difficult of a throw. But Mitch actually recognized the blitz, kind of adjusted and tried to get rid of the ball quickly, but maybe too quickly, and again, suffered in the inaccuracy location. So just a little bit there, and then maybe by the fourth quarter-ish, you know, the Bears had a pretty comfortable lead, so you saw Mitch throw it away a couple times and be more willing to just kind of put the ball in the dirt or in the third row of the stands and not take the hit and not try and make the big play because he had that comfortable lead. That's a little bit more of what I think I'd like to see in a game like this. You might remember during the game, the broadcast crew, who's CBS is what D crew, D level guys, and not Tony Romo, Jim Nance, not the guys below them, but 2 or 3 levels below them. I could not tell you the name of either person that announced their games, and I'm a millennial, so maybe I wasn't around for when their color commenter played football. I think my dad might have recognized the name of the guy, but I sure as heck didn't. So whoever these broadcasters were, who I thought did a decent job, all things considered, where they are on the CBS totem pole, but the color guy was comparing Mitchell Trubisky briefly to Aaron Rodgers, and not in terms of, not a full-on player-to-player comparison type thing, but just in the way that Mitch was able to escape the pocket and scramble a few times. And I thought there was a little bit of merit to that, but I also think there's a big difference. And I mean, well, obviously there's a big difference, but I mean, in terms of what they do when they scramble, you can see it a few times in Mitchell Trubisky's escapability. But what Aaron Rodgers does so well, and me living in Wisconsin, I get to see a lot of what Aaron Rodgers does so well. Aaron Rodgers, he escapes the pressure and gets out of the pocket, but what he does is he resets and looks downfield again, scans the field, and pretty often finds a receiver for a big gain against a coverage where they just weren't able to hold in position and weren't able to, you know, you just can't ask a back end to cover for 7 seconds. And so if you let Aaron Rodgers escape the pocket, that's how he kills you. And he'll even reset, look around, and then escape again, flip to the other side of the field, reset a second time, and by then he's almost always finding a guy wide open or chucking out of bounds or sometimes taking and scrambling. And that's the part that Mitch Trubisky is still working on. You know, Trubisky does a great job sometimes of feeling the pressure, getting out of the pocket, breaking a tackle. But when Mitchell Trubisky tucks the ball to run and puts that hand, puts the ball down in his arm and makes, you know, good contact with it, he is set on that scramble decision. And there were a few times in this game, and I've talked about it before on this podcast, I think, in previous games, when Mitchell Trubisky tucks and scrambles, and if he just look up or reset, he would see open receivers downfield for much bigger gains than he's able to get on the ground. You know, that's not true for every time he scrambled. There have been plenty of situations where the Browns send the blitz at him, and he's able to get out to the side of the field where the blitz had vacated, and there's plenty of daylight for him to run, and it's absolutely the best decision for him to just tuck it and run. And sometimes when you're trying to make that decision, if he can sacrifice yards downfield if you slow down to look up and look and find your receiver. So there's always, it's one of the most difficult things for any quarterback to master. And that's why, that's what makes Aaron Rodgers so impressive and why he is arguably the top three quarterback in the NFL. And that's what Mitchell is getting closer to. And this is what's the difference between a really good quarterback and a truly great quarterback. Like I said, not very many people do it the way Aaron Rodgers does. And Mitchell Trubisky is obviously not there yet. But Mitchell Trubisky has shown to be a very good quarterback. He can become a truly great quarterback if he can do that. Start the scramble, use that escapability, but keep your eyes downfield a little bit more. Have a better feel for how close the pursuing pass rush is to him. Because Aaron Rodgers will tuck it and run if there's a guy chasing him down, and he can't stop or at least slow down to look downfield. Absolutely. But knowing when you have time because of your escapability, being able to look, see, read, and deliver on an accurate throw to find open receivers downfield, that's the next level from very good quarterback to great quarterback. And that's one of the key ways that I'm going to be watching how Mitchell Trubisky develops moving forward. We've seen a lot of the baseline traits to be a very, very good quarterback. Let's see if he can become a truly great quarterback, or if he's in that very, very good range, which is not bad at all. That's not a bad thing at all. But as we look to see this young quarterback continue to develop, let's see if he can truly be special in those special areas and maybe start earning true Aaron Rodgers comparisons. We should have time this offseason to really dive into Mitchell Trubisky's growth from game one, week five, through week 17, and maybe try and find some really clear, tangible ways in which he grows. I hope you will stick with us here on Locked On Bears throughout the offseason to get you a daily dose of Chicago Bears football. As much as the Bears seem to have their way with the Browns defense, the Bears running game still had quite a few issues. I mean, you look at a guy like Jordan Howard in this game, he gets the two touchdowns, but in total, 22 carries for 44 yards. I'm not a math genius here, but I think that's 2 yards per carry, and that's not an ideal performance against, again, a very good Browns run defense. We talked with Jeff Lloyd to preview the game on Friday before the holiday weekend, and he mentioned that right away, that the Browns, or I guess he was sure to emphasize that the Browns run defense has been very good this year, and we did kind of see that. But I do think it just kind of highlighted further the issues in terms of talent right now on the Bears offensive line, with Hronus Grasu in at center and Bradley Soule in at left guard, and trying to find different mixes there. And then even after Bobby Massey goes out and Soule moves to right tackle, I thought he played pretty well over there. And Cameron Lee came in, and you know, not always a great offensive line combination, and a good Browns run defense was able to kind of take advantage and pretty well shut down the Bears running game. Didn't obviously do a perfect job, and you know, Mitchell Trubisky was able to make up for a lot of it. But you know, there's also some scheme issues in there in terms of knowing when the Bears are going to run the ball and how they're going to run the ball. You know, when they motion a tight end kind of off the line of scrimmage, and he's kind of standing behind the other tight ends. Usually he's working back across the formation, and it's a zone with a, it's called a split zone, where the one of the blockers moves across the formation to kind of follow the running back as he makes his cutback. You know, little things like that kind of give away when and how the Bears are going to run the ball. And, you know, when Michael Burton's on the field, he's been pretty much useless as a run blocker, and Daniel Brown hasn't been a great blocker. I mean, he's a converted wide receiver. I don't know how much you can expect from him there. And, you know, Loggins getting the Bears wide receivers too involved in the interior of the Bears running game, just little things like that, kind of holds them back. You know, Jordan Howard seems to pretty well be able to create, you know, probably 2 yards by himself on almost every run. And that was enough for that goal line touchdown, and certainly made a nice cut and acceleration on that longer 16-yard touchdown. But, you know, there's only so much space he had to work with, and that one long touchdown run was sort of the culmination of a game's worth of 2-yard runs, 3-yard runs, 1-yard runs over and over again, and finally broke free a little bit for that nice little touchdown in spite of poor offensive line talent and at times poor scheme. But that being said, I do want to give Dowell Loggins just a little bit of credit here, maybe more than a little bit, a decent amount of credit, because there were a couple things he did in this game that were positive and showed some growth in the offensive coordinator. It seems like at the end of the year here, he's showing more and more wrinkles of like, maybe this guy isn't terrible. He's not a good offensive coordinator. I'm not ready to concede that, but he's showing some growth, and that's important. You know, like, when you date back to most of this season, the Bears are a team here that runs on 1st and 10, the first drive of the game, of the first play of every drive, consistently every time. But in this game early on, he went to some play action on the 1st and 10, and that play action killed the Browns defense on a few different plays. That big throw downfield to Deion Sims was off play action on 1st and 10, the first play of a drive, and the Bears consistently were passing on that first play of the drive, and really threw a little bit of a different look at the Cleveland Browns that way, after being so predictable in that realm for the first 15 weeks. Again, why it took so long to figure this type of stuff out, there's your evidence, there's your damning evidence against Dowell Loggins, but still, at least there's growth, and there's some figuring it out there. And then, like, he made the second half adjustment to call some screenplays to Benny Cunningham and picked up, like, 60 yards doing that kind of thing. And that was great. It worked very well against the Browns' blitz. But did this offense and Dowell Loggins not know the Browns were going to blitz coming into this game? I mean, the Browns are the most blitz-heavy defense in the NFL. I guess I question why some running back screens weren't in the game plan early in the game, particularly on third down when they were blitzing the heck out of your quarterback and taking him down. And when you know they do that, that's what they are known for, it took halftime to figure that out and make that adjustment in game. Yes, it's good to see an in-game adjustment, but it should have been something that was already understood heading into the game. That should have been in the game plan from the start. All in all, I kind of felt like this was a good game to have for Mitchell Trubisky late in his rookie season. This was, I think, a different type of defense and a new learning opportunity for a young quarterback. I don't think he's played a defense yet this year that brought the heat after him the way the Cleveland Browns did in this game, and that challenged him to change protections at the line of scrimmage, get guys in better position, and challenge him to then, after the snap, recognize the blitz and get rid of the ball quickly. You know, he's certainly been under pressure quite a bit this year, and his offensive line has been a big reason for that. Teams haven't had to blitz him a ton to be able to get pressure on him, but this was a little bit of a different type of animal. Again, in a game that didn't matter in the win-loss score, you know, in terms of the season as a whole, so there's less pressure in that sense, and obviously he was still able to make plays, and his defense did a good job, so he didn't have to do everything, but it kind of put him in a different type of test, a little bit of a different animal that he hasn't quite faced, and he paid for it in some sacks and some mistakes in that area, but also was able to escape and make throws downfield. It was just a very good, different type of learning opportunity for a young quarterback that he hadn't faced this year. And if there's one thing you can take away as a positive reason why the Bears even bothered to play the Browns, why they even bothered to play that game instead of just canceling it and giving somebody the loss and moving on and saving us all 3 hours on Christmas, I think that was important and one probably my biggest takeaway from this game. A different type of defense and a new learning opportunity for Mitchell Trubisky. But hey, you made it through Bears-Browns. Even if you didn't watch the game, you just listened to me talk about it for, 25, 30 minutes about Bears-Browns. So hey, we did it. Take a breather. You got through it. It wasn't as bad as maybe you thought it was. That hopefully should be the last Browns talk we get on Locked On Bears for the foreseeable future. I think we'll be moving on to greener pastures here in the coming days on Locked On Bears. So don't worry. No more Cleveland Browns talk in your ear. I appreciate you sticking through it with me. You know, I had to watch it. I hope a lot of you watched it, or if you didn't watch it, you were able to get a pretty good glean from it from this podcast. I appreciate you listening in as always. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Bears. You can follow me on Twitter at Cox Sports One. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast and all that. And also, while you're at it, if you're into the Chicago Bulls, make sure you checked out Locked On Bulls. They got that going up again recently with new hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck. They even do like a live portion with it on the Dash Radio app. So you can listen to it there. Or, of course, it's on iTunes and the same place you're listening to Locked On Bears right now. The two of them do a great job breaking down the Bulls in a season that started out disappointing, but I think the Bulls went on like a 7-game winning streak for a while there. So interesting time to be a Bulls fan. And of course, Jordan and Matt break it down for you daily over there. And then for all you Cubs fans out there, they just got Locked On Cubs going recently as we expand the Locked On podcast network into the MLB networks. I don't believe there is a Locked On White Sox at this time, but Locked On Cubs is hosted by Ryan Davis from FanRag Sports, and he's doing a great job there breaking down the Chicago Cubs on a daily basis. So check out Locked On Bulls if you're into the NBA. Check out Locked On Cubs if you're into baseball and you're not a White Sox fan. White Sox fans, I'm sure Locked On White Sox will be coming your way soon, and we will hook you up with that podcast when it comes out. But the Locked On Podcast Network is growing, and you Locked On Bears listeners are a big part of that, continuing to tune in to all of our daily Bears shows, even in a 5-10 season. It's been my pleasure as we continue here to round out the 2017 season and move on to the offseason. I thank you so much for listening. It's been a blast. I hope you had a very joyous holiday weekend, and I hope you at least found a little bit of time to bear down.